And now, Marian Barisonic.
For the past few weeks, we've been hearing about an economic rebound based on rising stock prices and bank profits. But for most Americans, a healthy economy would have more jobs and fewer foreclosures. Andy Kroll recently spent some time with homeowners hoping to find their own bailout plan. Andy, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about, you recently wrote an article for TomDispatch.com about the illusion of the recovery. What is the Save the Dream Tour?
The Save the Dream Tour is a large homeowner relief event put on by the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, one of the biggest consumer advocate organizations in the country. And they travel around to major cities throughout the country, many of them foreclosure hotspots, anywhere from Las Vegas to Phoenix, Arizona, to Los Angeles, to San Francisco, which is the one I went to. And they basically bring together a bunch of counselors that are within the NACA umbrella, and they counsel people on how much they can really afford to pay on their mortgage each month. They look at taxes, they look at income, they look at monthly expenditures and so on. And then, you know, what makes this tour impressive as well, from my perspective, was that they also bring together almost all of the major banks and mortgage lenders in the country, and they're there in the arena right alongside the NACA people that are working for the organization. And the banks sit down with homeowners and try to hammer out a more affordable mortgage for people who, in many cases, this is their last option.
Well, one of the things that I found surprising when I was reading the article was the size of this event.
Yeah, I mean, there was 45,000 people over 5 days in San Francisco. There were about 50,000 in Los Angeles, and I mean, all over the country, it's massive numbers like this, 40,000, 50,000 people, and it all goes to show that there are that many homeowners out there who are really grasping for some kind of help that are still struggling through this supposed recovery. Jobless recovery that we're having right now.
And we're talking about people who were doing things like camping out for overnight or staying for several days because the lines were so long?
Exactly, yeah. It looked like people, as I mentioned in this piece, it looked like they were staking out this arena for, you know, like a Rolling Stones concert or something, because they were lined up outside at night, and I hung out with them there. Waiting for the next morning. Basically, they're going to sleep in a cold parking lot all night. And the people, some of them stayed in hotels, some of them slept in their cars in the parking lot. You know, they did not want to lose their spot because they really, I mean, they realized that, you know, this is such a valuable opportunity, and it's free. So they definitely don't want to miss their shot.
Well, I think what's interesting, too, is to contrast the desperation of the homeowners with the bailouts that we've been seeing for the banks, where they're handed literally trillions of dollars in cash that they're not accountable for. And then when the profits start to rebound, the banks are still unwilling to renegotiate the loans.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, and it's definitely troubling to see that. And you know, one of the things that I mentioned in some other writing that I've done on the housing industry is that, you know, many of the so-called, you know, subprime villains that, you know, were the main drivers behind these explosive, you know, tricky, convoluted loans and mortgages are the ones who did receive bailouts in the billions of dollars. But, yeah, I mean, they, by no means has that meant, okay, now we're going to start helping people because we got a bailout. I mean, the Treasury Department, the Obama administration as a whole has had to practically pull teeth to get these lenders to help at all, and they're still having problems with it. So no, I mean, bailout money certainly isn't equated to helping people who are, you know, losing their jobs and impacted on this case.
Now, this Save the Dream Tour was put on by the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America. Can you tell me a little bit more about that organization and how is that funded?
Yeah, the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America is a consumer advocate corporation that basically deals with homeowner issues and deals with trying to, you know, it really with, and especially with mortgage issues in terms of trying to travel around the country, especially with this tour, and help people, you know, renegotiate their loans and work with banks. And they're also, NACA is also, and especially their pugnacious CEO, Bruce Marks, are especially recognized because they have these accountability campaigns and what their CEO calls, and I'm not kidding, nonviolent bank terrorism. It's basically these, he masses large numbers of people, and they'll basically go to the homes or neighborhoods or, you know, subdivisions of bank CEOs and harass them pretty much until they get these until they get these CEOs to shape up or change their practices. And you know, it's a no holds barred kind of organization. In terms of how they get their funding, I mean, I know they're a nonprofit organization, so they're not a for-profit. And I mean, where in terms of how they're funded, I'm guessing it's from grants and foundations and donations, like most other nonprofits. So it's not like they're profiting off of helping people.
Right. So it seemed that your experience was that people were having mixed results with this this event.
Yeah, that was certainly the case. And it obviously was an inevitable result. I mean, not everyone who shows up is going to be helped. You know, part of it had to do with that some people are just so underwater, meaning they owe more than their house is worth, that, I mean, there really is no solution for them. Sometimes it was due to kind of the intransigence of the lenders and the banks, just not willing to work with people. I mean, I quoted one woman, Maria Hernandez from San Jose, California, who, I mean, that was basically the case for her. She worked with a counselor and everything was fine. Then she sat down with her bank, which was Wachovia, and they wouldn't play ball. And she came away from the event empty-handed. She might get a call back with an answer, but, I mean, she had been sitting around for 36 hours and she was pretty tired and not happy that nothing came out of this in the immediate term. So,
but the banks don't have any real incentive to renegotiate the loans, do they?
Well, it depends on the case, to be perfectly honest. I mean, sometimes it seems that they would have an incentive to renegotiate, because if there's a foreclosure, I mean, you're not getting payments from someone. Or if it's a deed in lieu situation where basically they give the deed to avoid foreclosure, I mean, the house might not be worth what it was originally. And so in some cases, the banks, you know, it would make sense that they would want to try to help people because they would then keep getting mortgage payments and they would have this loan paid off. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they can profit more from foreclosing on someone.
Now, there have been some government programs like Making Home Affordable. How effective has that been?
The Making Home Affordable program, the main element of that is a $75 billion program called the Home Affordable Modification Program, which is a lot like, in some ways, the NACA event. Basically, it's a program to try to change the terms of mortgages, to try to lower interest rates, to try to extend the life of the term, to try to reduce principal balance, to basically get people payments they can afford. That program, the government's $75 billion program, to date has been a complete bust, to be honest. And I've written about this before. The program started in March. And by September, the total amount of people who had received permanent, lasting help was about almost 2,000.
Whoa, that isn't even a fraction of the people who attended this NACA event in San Francisco.
Right, exactly. And I mean, in this year alone, there's an estimated 3 million starts or, you know, initiations of foreclosure proceedings. And, you know, analysts for the bank Goldman Sachs estimate that in the next 5 or 6 years, we're going to have 13 million foreclosures. So, I mean, this government program initially said we're going to help 3 to 4 million people. Since then, estimates by people in the housing industry said, no, that's probably going to be about 1 to 1.5. And if you look at that in the context of 13 million, you know, 1.5 million, and even 2, you're not really putting much of a dent in this housing crisis.
Now, the housing crisis, we're not hearing as much about it anymore. One of the places you visited for this article also was Stockton, California, where the foreclosure rate has dropped from 9.5% of the city's houses in 2008. That's incredible. Almost 10% of every single house in Stockton was in foreclosure. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it was exactly. It was almost one of every 10 houses. You know, I mean, it was the definition of decimate, as I say in this piece. And it was the highest rate of metropolitan areas in the United States, according to the FBI's mortgage fraud year in review report for 2008. So, yeah, it was a pretty incredible place. I mean, it was the foreclosure capital.
But now the rate is down to 3.5%, which is really high, but a dramatic drop. So is this a success story, and are we seeing a slowdown in the foreclosures?
I don't think that Stockton is a success story. I mean, I think that, like you said, I mean, the 9.5% rate is now down to 3.5%. I mean, that rate fluctuates without a doubt, and it wouldn't be strange at all to see it go back up to 5 or 6 next year. And I think what we're also seeing is that while Stockton may not be top of the list, other places are surpassing it with rates comparable to that 9.5% in 2008. Though it is good to see that Stockton's rate has gone down. Still, I mean, the city is very much a case study in how the housing crisis has hit, particularly cities like Stockton, you know, that had a lot of subdivision development and new development in the middle of the 2000s. So it was a very interesting place to go for a firsthand view.
Okay, you're listening to Political Perspectives on KBOO Radio. I'm Marianne Barasonic, and my guest is Andy Kroll. We're talking about an article that he recently published on TomDispatch.com, and I think it was also on Mother Jones, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's where I'm a writer for Mother Jones as well, and it was republished there.
Okay, and the article is about the foreclosures. Now, one of the things that you talked about when you were visiting Stockton is your worries that the tax credit for first-time home buyers could cause a bubble in the rubble. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Of course. It's, you know, the federal government, as part of its stimulus, grand stimulus package, it basically, you know, offered this tax credit for first-time home buyers, essentially saying, we're going to give you $8,000 to buy a house, and, you know, this is going to help spur the economic recovery. This is going to help, you know, bolster the housing industry. But I think as this tax credit has been in place for a longer and longer amount of time, and it's actually been renewed by legislators in Washington, I think people have realized that it's not serving the purpose it was intended for, that it's going to people first who probably would have bought these houses anyway without a tax credit, but that it's also kind of fueling the possibility that people are going to try to go out and buy houses that maybe they don't afford, or that it's kind of, you know, giving credence to speculation in the housing industry that, hey, if I throw up some new houses, you know, somewhere on the fringes of Stockton, California, or somewhere else, that this new tax credit is going to entice people to then come in and invest and buy these houses when maybe they really shouldn't and they can't afford it.
And the reason also that we might be seeing this is because all of the reasons that caused the bubble in the first place haven't been addressed, and we haven't seen any effective regulation. I mean, Barney Frank had originally proposed some legislation that would force banks to offer the kind of plain vanilla loans that are straightforward, and that went down in flames. So all of the kind of tricky mortgages that are out there that tripped people up a few years ago are still there.
Right, of course. And the defeat of that plain vanilla provision in Representative Frank's legislation. What seems to be an influential proposal for financial reform, that was definitely disappointing because it would have done away with the very kinds of tricky mortgages that brought on the subprime meltdown, so to speak. But, you know, that got shot down, thanks in large part to, you know, lobbying and industry influence from the housing industry, from the financial services industry. So seeing that go was disappointing. Now, there are certainly other parts of his proposals that are cause for optimism, I would say. I mean, he plans to try to regulate derivatives, even though that's being kind of eaten away. And the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, this one regulator that would regulate mortgages, say, the way the Consumer Product Safety Commission regulates toasters, is promising as well.
But we're also seeing, I was reading, I think it was Matt Taibbi's article recently in Rolling Stone, where it's something like there's four banks that are issuing half of all the mortgages in the U.S., and it's, you know, the usual suspects like Bank of America and Wells Fargo, and these are banks that have made some really bad decisions in the past, but they're able to basically say whatever terms they like for these refinances.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're seeing that, and I mean, one thing that's certainly become the case in the aftermath of this crisis is that the loans and the, you know, financial trading and so on, you know, a lot of the activity in Wall Street has really been condensed, has really been, you know, the industry has shrunk, and so now it's very much concentrated in the hands of a few very, very powerful and much larger financial institutions, and by being so much larger and by being so much influential than before, and really by being the only ones still left, they have the clout to say, hey, we're going to keep offering these kinds of tricky and manipulative and explosive financial instruments, financial products, loans, and so on, and there's not really anything you can do about it to legislators and to the public.
And the reason that they survived wasn't because they'd made the best decisions or were the most business savvy. It was because they got the biggest bailouts.
Right, of course. I mean, none of these banks, with a few exceptions, would be around if they didn't get massive government infusions, if they didn't get huge bailouts. So that's exactly right. But obviously, the amnesia here is pretty acute because that certainly hasn't stopped them from acting in ways that aren't helpful to consumers in the aftermath of the bailouts.
Now, when you talked to people in a place like Stockton, do they understand what the causes are? I mean, I just can't imagine that this is going without a certain amount of anger, but it's not like we're seeing huge public demonstrations or, you know, efforts to have kind of a political overthrow of the system.
I think talking to people in Stockton, you get the sense that they know the broad brushstrokes of what happened. They have a general sense of what went on. But I think one problem, and this applies not just to Stockton but to all over the country, the problem with this crisis was that the causes were so complex and the causes were so obscure, and they remain so today. I mean, our federal government has yet to give us a good, thorough explanation of why all this stuff happened. With that being the case, I think people, it's hard to get mad, and this applies to healthcare. It's hard to get mad when you don't fully understand what you're getting mad about. And I think that there's definitely animosity toward, in a general sense, toward large banks and financial institutions on Wall Street. I mean, anyone can read that, you know, Goldman Sachs made $3.2 billion in the third quarter of this year. And people are angry about that, for sure. And they're certainly angry at lenders, especially in a place like Stockton, for what feels like being ripped off. and for what feels like, you know, preying on homeowners that don't understand how mortgages work. But I think the complexity of it continues to be a stumbling block for a lot of people to really get impassioned about it because it's just so difficult to understand.
Now, one of the things we heard about early on in the foreclosure crisis was people squatting in their own homes and refusing to leave. Did you see anything of that? And what do you think of that as a strategy?
I think as a strategy, I mean, it's one of many things that I've heard. I mean, that's kind of along the lines of, you know, taking matters into your own hands. I mean, some people have just said, in the exact opposite end of the spectrum, you know what, I don't care about this house anymore. I can't pay this debt. And so they throw the keys under the welcome mat and they just walk out and leave. And these are all symptoms, squatting in your own house, renting, you know, trying to rent to own your house back after working with a lender, just ditching the house altogether. And these things are all symptoms. I mean, I think it's kind of depressing that that would become the case, that someone has to squat in their own home. I mean, that's obviously a point where they've tried to work things out and they haven't worked. And if someone's forced to do that, I mean, that's a sad state of affairs in many ways.
Now, Stockton is the kind of extreme case, but what are the numbers looking like kind of across the board in the U.S., and what does it look like in the future for foreclosures and that sort of thing?
Of course. Like I mentioned earlier, that a analyst for the Center for Responsible Lending estimates that there will be several million initiations of foreclosure proceedings, or what's called foreclosure starts, this year, which is a very, very significant number, and which goes to show that the housing crisis really is not abated at all, and it's very much still a problem that needs to be addressed and addressed much more vigorously than it has to this point. I mean, projections on how long it'll take the housing industry to rebound vary from source to source. Some analysts suggest that the industry has hit bottom already and is on its way up. Some suggest that, you know, next year we'll start seeing an upturn. And then others suggest that, for instance, an analyst for Moody's, which is a rating service, and they suggest that, you know, it'll take upwards of a decade to get back to close to where we were, say, in the beginning part of this decade, or, you know, 2002, 2003. So it's difficult to see at this point. There are certainly things that need to be done and that could be done to improve the recovery. For instance, if the government allowed the implementation of cramdown, which is allowing bankruptcy judges to modify mortgages, that would really speed things up. And that's something the Senate looked at, U.S. Senate looked at, then shot down. They're looking at it again.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what cramdown is?
Right, of course. So cramdown, I mean, right now, if you're a homeowner and you're in trouble, you try to negotiate with your lender. You try to work with them. Or you try to get into this government program, which then, you know, expedites working with the lender. Cramdown would basically be you would go to a bankruptcy court and you would work with a judge there, and the judge would look at your case and essentially say, okay, we're going to change the terms of your mortgage in X, Y, and Z ways. Lender, you have to deal with this. You know, you don't really have much of a say here. And so it's judicial, basically judicial authority just changing mortgages so people can afford them. And it's something that would have had a much more direct effect on how the housing crisis is dealt with. And the housing industry doesn't like it because it could mean significant losses and they don't have much say in it. So they successfully kill cramdown earlier this year. But it could come back, and it does have the prospects for it helping the crisis are good. The government is trying to fix and improve its relief programs, and they deserve credit for that. There's a lot to be fixed, so hopefully they'll be getting on it sooner rather than later.
Well, the cramdown seems like a pretty heavy-handed approach, but on the other hand, looking at the size of the crisis here, it seems like something like that is almost going to have to happen. Is anyone benefiting from this crisis?
Yeah, there are certainly people benefiting from this crisis. Obviously, the major lenders are benefiting, especially if you're talking about bailouts. The major lenders are benefiting because, as part of the government's mortgage relief program, you know, they're receiving millions and even billions of dollars, or they're slated to receive these large amounts of money to help homeowners. So they're basically, you know, getting paid to they're being, you know, it's incentivized for them to help homeowners. So they're cleaning up on that end of it as well. And then there's this whole industry that is called the mortgage servicing industry. And what they are is they're basically the middlemen of the housing industry. They don't own the loan. They're not your lender, but they take your payments. They offer customer service. And in the case of a foreclosure, they handle that process. And they've actually been doing quite well in this crisis because, you know, it doesn't matter to them how the loan is doing because they don't own it. But they make money and they make lucrative fees foreclosing on people. There are many, many fees that are paid in a foreclosure process, and these servicers are collecting them, and they're cleaning up it with all these, you know, 3 million foreclosures started this year. You know, that's a boon for them. So the person who's obviously not benefiting are homeowners and consumers. And I think Cramdown, heavy-handed as it is, would be a very consumer-centric program.
Now, those are the guys who are benefiting, and they're completely legitimate. But there's a whole crop of scam artists that have grown up around this, too.
Right, exactly. And I mentioned, you know, a kind of glimpse of them in my piece, in that, you know, there are signs along the side of the road in Stockton that say, mortgage modification works, or call for loan modifications, and then they have this local phone number. But, of course, there's no name for who you're actually calling, and those are almost undoubtedly scams. And scams range from, you know, guys on the street corner, figuratively speaking, you know, informal kind of hush-hush people who say, hey, pay us $2,000 and we'll make your problems go away, and all they do is take your $2,000 and leave, all the way up to, I mean, there are entire law firms that are called foreclosure mills, and basically their job is to just crank through foreclosures for banks, and there's a lot of questions of corruption and fraud with these foreclosure mills and basically forcing foreclosures on people who haven't even been given the legal rights and the legal process in the foreclosure proceedings.
Okay, and Andy, if people want to read the whole article, where should they go?
They should go to tomdispatch.com. And the whole piece is there, as well as, you know, some other fantastic reporting and commentary.
Okay, Andy, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.